It's time!
Happy number one, the Eagle rises again, 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's out!
He has done it! It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Lava, you are trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to Pound for Pound, WFUV's home for all things combat sports. I'm your host once again, Andrew Canary, and we got a bit of a different episode going on today. Monty Dembele out of the studio and said, it's just me and you, Riley Lucas, and I am pretty happy being in the studio because we did sadly miss last week our recap episode of Ricky Simone versus Song Yadong.
Whatever.
And I want to be the first to say to all our listeners out there, since Monty isn't here, he would definitely be the one to mention this, that you are finally wrong, Riley.
Finally wrong.
Finally.
The time has come.
Yep, I just did a round of applause in the studio.
Whatever,
I'm
like
happy.
20 for one still, it's all right. Even the greats fall down eventually, so.
But we did just have UFC 288 wrapping up last weekend. I was in attendance with our sports director, Bobby Chaffardini. It was a great night in the Prudential Center. We're going to unpack all that action. We're going to unpack your wrong pick versus Song Yadong.
I knew you weren't going to let me off. I was joking, too, because I thought that since we missed last week, I was like, sweet, I'm off the hook. Like, I'm not going to have to hear about this. And here we are. Yay.
Yeah. Riley called out sick last week, and I think maybe partly because she got her pick wrong. Maybe. Possibly. Maybe she made herself sick. I don't know. But
the fight made me sick. That's what happened.
Yeah.
The outcome of that fight made me sick.
Well, I think just without further ado, let's just get into it. So 2 weeks ago, we had UFC Fight Night, Song Yadong versus Ricky Simone. Pretty great card all around, but mainly I just want to touch on the main event, which was obviously Song Yadong versus Ricky Simone. Song Yadong defeating Ricky Simone via KO, TKO in round 5, about a minute 10 into that 5th round. It was pretty much a shutout performance for Yadong against Simone, who looked better in grappling, striking, clinch work, pretty much any way that you want to slice it. Song Yadong looked better than Ricky Simone. And yeah, I mean, I want to say that I saw going in that it would be this emphatic. But I don't think I don't think I did. I think that Song Yadong really kind of put a lot of the naysayers to rest with this one. And I think it was a great performance.
No, I mean, I was completely blown away by his performance. Obviously, I had Ricky Simone, as we all know. I'm sure I'm going to hear about it for the next month. But, you know, there's no denying that Yadong is an absolute monster. It was an incredible win for him. He really has improved a lot since the Sandhagen fight. I think we could all say that. And his power difference was massive in this fight. I think that also carried him through this. He has insane cardio. His head movement was insane. He blew me away with the performance. I mean, there's no denying that. I think it really sucked for Ricky Simone. I think that power difference is going to hurt him moving forward. But I think he's still in the top 10. I do. He has a chance to come back. But it was definitely an incredible performance for Song Yadong.
Yeah, no, fantastic.
Which pains me to say.
Really pains you to say here on the pod. But yeah, I think the power difference that you just talked about is like a real highlight from this matchup. Because every single time that Simone would land against Yadong, and it was pretty frequent. I mean, out of 144 total strikes, he lands 64 of those, 60 of those being significant, but not as significant as the strikes that Song Yadong put in. They just did not have as much pop, and it didn't send Yadong, like, you know, to the canvas, anything like that, or really, like, put him in a bad position throughout the fight. And that paired together with Ricky Simone's kind of faltering takedown attempts, he only was able to secure 2 out of 9. And even those two, I feel like he only was able to really get Yadong down for maybe a couple seconds.
Yeah.
And then he was right back up.
Yeah, I mean, along with power, I think that was the biggest difference in this fight. With Song Yadong, you saw that he had incredible takedown defense. Even when he was on the ground, he popped right back up. His wrestling defense was just on point the whole fight. It honestly made me sick to see. Like I said, I think this fight made me sick because obviously I had Ricky Simone, whatever. But, you know, there's no denying that it was an incredible win on his behalf. I think he really showed me that he's capable of climbing to the top. I don't even want to keep talking about it. It just hurts me. But, you know, Ricky Simone didn't pressure him enough. He really didn't. And then he slowed down towards the end of the fight, and obviously Song didn't. And that there was just a lot of pieces that granted Song Yadong this win, and Ricky Simone just wasn't there.
Yeah, no, just wasn't. And I think, I mean, with this win, so being in as emphatic as it was for Yadong, I can see him maybe fighting a Rob Font in the future, or Marlon Vera.
I agree.
You agree with that?
Yeah.
So which one do you like more?
I would love to
that?
See Rob Font.
Okay,
I would love
Font
to see
fight?
Rob Font. I'm a Rob Font fan. I remember the first time we recorded this pod, that was the last time Rob Font fought. It's too many sounds there.
Yeah.
Rob Font fought. But no, so I would love to see that. Obviously, I think in my fantasy land, I would love to see Peter Yan too. I think that would be so fun to watch, but right now I would like to see him go up against Rob Font.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that would be a fun fight, and Rob Font just knocked out Adrian Yanez in, like, you know,
yeah,
stylistic fashion. So I think
I did
that,
pick that one.
Yeah, you
I
did
just
pick
say,
that one. Yeah,
I so, got that one.
So I guess 1-1 going
yeah.
into that
reminder
matchup. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I definitely can see Song putting up quite the fight in that fight, and I mean, with a big win over that really propels him in the top 5,
100%.
And possibly title contention.
No, I 100% believe he's there for title contention. Yeah.
And obviously, I think Ricky Simone needs to go back to the drawing board here. And I think that he can be a top 10 fighter, but I don't know. I think he's got to work on something if he really wants to break through that top 5.
Yeah, I mean, I know we talked about previously about him being sort of a gatekeeper, and I just think as of now, that's what I see for him.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say that, but he consistently proves that he can beat 90% of fighters, and then when it's someone elite that he needs to beat to get to the next level, he always loses.
Yeah.
And I just don't see him breaking that cycle anytime soon.
Yeah, when it's in that top 10%,
mm-hmm.
you know, he just can't get the job done. And sadly, that's what, you know, makes or breaks a real, I guess, a top 15 fighter.
And it's so hard because it's like he's always so close. And
I know, he's
never
always on the cusp.
You're like,
yeah.
Oh, that's why I just really thought he had it this time. I was like, this is it. Like, he's gonna break that little wall he has built up with himself, and nope.
Yeah, no, I mean, it kind of reminds me a bit of Rob Davashvili, who we'll talk about later, with the whole Aljamain Sterling thing versus when he fought Piotr Jan,
mm-hmm.
where it was like a real kind of showing of, oh, this guy can beat the top 10%. You know, up
yeah.
until then, I was like, yeah, he can definitely take care of the bottom 90% of, you know, all bantamweights that are in the UFC bantamweight division. But how does he really perform against those top 5 guys, those top 10 guys? And it turns
mm-hmm.
out, you know, he really could versus Ricky Simone, who's clearly still having some trouble.
Exactly.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, he recovers quickly from that TKO loss, or, I mean, it was more of a KO. You know, but
yeah.
Hopefully he recovers quickly, gets back to the drawing board, and, yeah, the sky's the limit for
Song
Yadong.
Come on, Ricky Simone.
Yeah.
Broke my winning streak. He's my new enemy. I don't like him anymore.
Oh, wow.
That's what it is.
The real turn here. Okay.
Yeah, it's a
All
real
right.
turn. That's what
yeah.
happened. I'm switching up on him.
Yeah. But moving on, the following weekend, this past weekend, we have UFC 288 officially in the books. It was a fantastic card from head to toe. Prelims were amazing. Main card was amazing. I was actually there in attendance.
Which I'm so jealous of.
Shout out to 90.7 WFUV, our studio that was able to graciously get
so
me credentials
awesome.
To cover the event with our sports director, Bobby Chaffardini. We both were in attendance all night. It was a great event. Oh, it was so amazing.
It was a very exciting one.
Yeah.
A lot went on, which
yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about.
A ton. And I do want to start off here with a featured prelim recap. A couple of the early prelims, pretty amazing. And the entire preliminary card, Kennedy and Jechiku, a couple others, really showing out. But what I really want to talk about here is Long Island's very own Matt Frafola defeating
yes.
Drew Dober via KO, TKO, round 1, 4 minutes into that first round. I was so surprised by this
really?
Fight.
Really?
So surprised.
I wasn't. And that's why once I saw this fight, I was so mad that we didn't record last week because I was so confident with this one.
Really?
And I was, yes, I love Matt Frivola. Mm-hmm. It really would take a ginger. He's the only one who can stop that chin. I just think it's so funny. So that's what it was. It took a ginger to stop his chin. And I love Matt Frivola, so I was really excited with this win. I wish I could have came in here and gloated last week about it, but obviously we didn't record.
Yeah, missed opportunity.
But
missed
this
opportunity.
This was my favorite fight of the night, too, as well. Like, I just really loved watching this.
Oh, from start to finish, it was action-packed. I mean, these two guys were just thrown at each other. And Drew Dober's always been one of my favorite fighters in the past couple of years, just for how he fights.
It's honestly... Well, I was just going to say, it's honestly pretty sad. Not sad, but it's almost like he was almost there. Like, he was on his way to being the top guy again, and then Matt Frivola just came in and shut it down.
I know. He was so close to getting those top fights that he really, really wanted. And a lot of the fans were like, you got to get up into that top 15 to have those exciting fights because he has such a, you know, exciting style to see in the octagon. But Matt Frivola, the steamroller, just steamrolled right through all that hype.
And I love his energy, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's such personality. I just love watching him.
Yeah, so my view of Frivola going into this fight was I love his personality. I think he's one of the most fun guys on the roster. Mm-hmm. I think that,
it's
like,
the ginger power, I'm telling you.
It's the ginger power and also the New York power. Like, he's totally part of that Aljamain Sterling, like, Ray Longo, Matt Serra, like, whole gym out in Long Island. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, all those guys out there. But despite that, I didn't think he really had that stuff to, like...
Yeah. To
seal the deal, make it in top 15 and get wins over guys like Drew Dober, who are really, really dangerous in this lightweight division. I feel like are kind of a litmus test to how you're going to do once you break that top 15. But Frivola looked amazing in this fight. He looked so, so good. Yeah, I mean, he was able to pelt Dober with shots just on the feet, able to evade out of those big waiting strikes that Dober was pressuring him against, leading to him dropping him with, was it a right hand or was it a left hook?
I think it was a right hand.
Okay, it was
a
right hand.
I believe it was right, yeah, because Drew was throwing a lot of left. I mean, it was like the classic, like, orthodox versus southpaw, but
exactly.
I believe it was the right.
Got you. Yeah, exactly. Leading to the drop, Drew Dober protested a stoppage after Matt Frivola kind of pounded him out a little bit on the ground.
I will say, I can understand that.
Yeah, so, I mean,
I think it could have went on. I still don't think Drew Dober would have won, but I think he could have popped back up and recovered from that, for sure.
I think, yeah, it was definitely a bit of an early stoppage for a fighter like Dober, who is known to have a really durable chin. It's like one of those kind of Tony Ferguson-esque fighters that just keeps going. But despite that, I don't think it was a bad stoppage by any means.
See... You know, I have my thoughts. Like, a part of me, because I thought Matt Frivola was obviously, like, cracked him, I thought, you know, stop the fight. But then also I was thinking, you know, we know how Drew Dober is, and because he has, like, that iron chin and can pop back up typically. So then I kind of started thinking, like, I kind of feel like he could have popped back up and at least kept going a little bit. But I think the next fight's going to be Herb Dean and Drew Dober. I mean, literally the worst. I personally think he's, like, the worst ref in UFC.
Look, Herb Dean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that might be the next fight. I think Drew Dober's going to have to
It's
knock
so
him
funny
out.
That on, like, podcasts, and for a while, I feel like a couple of years ago, people were saying, like, Herb Dean, the gold standard and MMA refereeing.
He's
I'm like,
not.
That could not be farther from the truth. Maybe we'll do a special pound-for-pound referee episode, like, the tier list for all the referees. Because I do have, like, my top
you do?
Three. Yeah.
We'll dig into that.
Yeah, we'll dig
I'm excited.
That.
Now I want to hear this.
Got you.
But no, I know. But either way, I just think that this should be kind of like a wake-up call for a lot of fighters who do rely on their chin. Because you see this example, and you can't. I mean, Matt Frivola just cracked him, and it was a very awesome fight to watch. I mean, words can't describe how happy I was. I wish I was with you guys. I was, like, jumping up and down. I was alone in my room. I was like, this is awesome. Like I said, I predicted Frivola to win. And one of the reasons I thought so was because Drew Dober, he's never won four straight fights. Every time he goes 3-0 on a fight, it's just, like, the fourth one. He's always lost. He kind of has a pattern with that. So I was like, okay, statistically speaking, I was trying to get, like, all analytical in my head. He's not going to win.
I mean,
this.
That's pretty smart, though, because, I mean, you amount three wins against, you know, so-so guys that have, you know, some names, but winnable fights. And then that fourth fight, you really go against somebody that's a real test against you, and I guess Drew Dober just can't get it done at times.
Yeah, I mean, he just has awful defense in the pocket, and that's what really stops him from taking it to the next level every single time. He can't get higher in rankings, and it's always because of that issue. So that was hard to watch. And he just, I just have an issue with the way he takes damage. I do. I just, that's the one thing. If I could change anything about Drew Dober, it would be that. But, you know, kudos to Matt Frivola. I loved watching him win.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Frivola, I mean, what a way to start the night for the Long Island team also. Really set the tone. I mean, he was pumped
up. Good night for New Yorkers.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very good night. And off the back of that, he actually calls out Patty Pimblett, who's coming off injury. Oh, I would love that.
That would expose
Patty Pimblett, which is another storyline. Maybe we'll talk about that later if that fight gets made. But you want to see that fight?
Yes, I would love to see that. Obviously, I'm pulling Matt Frivola still. I'm riding with him all the way. Yeah. Riding with my gingers on this one.
Of course. It's the bull cut versus the ginger, I guess. Yeah. That's crazy.
What a fight. Two characters. It's just going to be a fun fight. I mean, aside from how I love watching both of them in the ring, I just think their personalities on top of that, it's going to be very entertaining.
That would be such a fight, pre-fight press conference to watch. But, we'll see what happens with Frivola. And hopefully Dober, you know, kind of learn some defensive metrics, maybe a little bit head movement.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing I just wanted to touch on before we change subjects is that we've seen multiple times where it's almost like a prelim is so much better to watch than a main card, and it's like we watch them earn the right to a main card, and it's always someone that I think should have been on the main card, and they end up having this awesome fight. And personally, I thought this should have been a main card fight. I did. Yeah. I love Matt Frivola. I think Drew Dober is an amazing fighter. I think they were two guys who earned that slot. So then watching this fight be very entertaining, and a lot of the fans love it. I just think it should have been the main card slot, and I think that they proved that, and I think Matt Frivola from here on out will have main card slots. So I think, you know, good for him in all aspects.
Oh, 100%. And I think it's kind of like a double-edged sword. I think, you're not getting those pay-per-view numbers, especially on this big, like UFC number cards, but also to that same extent, you're not locked behind that paywall. And then you're also on, you know, ESPN national television, so everyone can see your fight. So I think it's a good launching pad for Frivola. Yeah, a bit bittersweet. And I think it's a good launching pad for Frivola. Mm-hmm. So all those people that just happen to be tuning into ESPN are like, I want to watch that guy fight on the main card.
Yeah.
So
it does give him more of an audience to build.
Yeah, so we'll see. But moving on to the main card, the first fight that was scheduled was the return of Crone Gracie.
A very embarrassing return.
I was so excited for this fight. I watched him first fight back in the day against Alex Caceres, where he did like a tripod type takedown, followed by a rear naked choke. It was so cool, and I was like, this guy is going places. And then he fought Cub Swanson, and then got really exposed for striking. And then after that, spent nearly 4 3 years out of the octagon. This was his comeback fight against Charles Jourdain. And wow, what an embarrassingly bad performance.
Very embarrassing. Like, extremely embarrassing. Words cannot describe. Here's my thing. If you do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and you're listening to this, I'm about to make you very mad. Because I just think it's the worst base to have in MMA. It really is. It's not designed for translation.
You are going to
I'm gonna make people mad, but it's not. And I just, it drives me crazy how there's people who still think that, and I think this proved that it's not it can't translate into all different fighting styles.
I disagree with you that I think jiu-jitsu is a good base for MMA. I think solely a jiu-jitsu base, or solely a striking base, solely a wrestling base, I think that era in the UFC and MMA overall is a bygone era. That is so far gone. That is like ancient history.
It's outdated. Even Charles Jourdain said it himself in the post conference. He's like, no, it's over. It's outdated.
Like, it doesn't
work. Look, I just killed this guy. Like, it's
exactly.
It's done.
And like, I mean, you could say like all the accolades that Crone Gracie has. And, like, you know, he comes from the Gracie family, obviously Royce Gracie and Hoyler Gracie, all those guys that literally created jiu-jitsu and also the UFC and won all those first events. And it's just kind of weird seeing this, like, essentially like a time capsule from that past fighting in the present day UFC, and just, it's just jarring to see how it doesn't work nowadays.
1,000%. I mean, if you put a well-rounded MMA guy up against a BJJ guy, every time that MMA guy's coming out on top.
Yeah,
exactly. He's coming out on top. And I think people don't understand that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu wasn't even meant to be an offensive martial art. It's a defensive style. Mm-hmm. And Crone's, I mean, he survived, so it shows Jiu-Jitsu can minimize damage, but it's just outdated. It's outdated, and it can't win fights.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, like, for him to actually win some fights, I mean, I'm looking at the stats now. I mean, he 100% went for a few takedown attempts against, like, you know, the cage and everything like that. But what I'm reading here, it says 0 out of 0 takedown attempts. When you're a jiu-jitsu fighter that is renowned for your submissions and you need to get the fight to the ground against especially somebody like Jourdain, and you have 0 out of 0 takedown attempts, what is going on? You got to work some wrestling in there, something.
Well, I think the biggest problem with Brazilian jiu-jitsu is 90% of the training does start on the ground, and there is almost no takedown practice, whereas wrestling, you know, you have the opposite. So I think that automatically sets these guys up for failure, and I mean, we've seen that over and over again, especially in today's day and age. Like, you're just not going to win a fight with this.
Yeah.
So...
No, definitely. And I think, again, I guess I'm bringing back the double-edged sword whole thing. I think it's like either you sell for the takedown, you go crazy for it, and you end up like Rodolfo Vieira and you get choked down like the second round, a huge upset, or you conserve your energy and you don't really even go for a takedown because you, one, don't really know how to do it, two, don't really have the energy, and you just get outstruck like Crone Gracie here.
Yeah, which was, oh God, it was so embarrassing.
What an emphatic beatdown. Oh my God. Like, I'm looking at the stats here and they don't look too crazy. It was 171 total strikes for Crone Gracie versus 175 versus Charles Jourdain. But if you look at the visuals of their faces after this fight, I mean, Crone Gracie looked like he went through the grinder, whereas Charles Jourdain looked like, I don't know, like he was in his Sunday best or something like that. It was crazy.
I mean, what was it like watching this in person?
Oh, it was, I mean, people started flashing the lights in the audience and everything like that. Like, the whole, like, concert lighting where, you know, you light, like, a lighter and do, like, for a slow
But what
song.
Was your initial reaction in person to this fight? Because, obviously, you were really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I was
really... Must have been very disappointing.
All right, so for me personally, I was so excited to see Crone Gracie step back in there. Because when he first fought was when I started watching the UFC. So him coming back was kind of like a full circle moment, especially for me covering it in person.
Yeah, he destroyed your childhood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He quite literally destroyed it. All of those hopes and dreams on Saturday. Because when he started fighting, I was like, wow, this is such a dated style. And it was kind of funny, actually, watching it back then when I knew what I knew about MMA versus now, where... Back in the day, I was like, oh, this guy's pretty cool. He could definitely go some places. Versus now, where I'm like, he needs to work and
switch it up
immediately.
Really,
like,
needs to switch it up.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was definitely cool seeing him, especially for being, like I said, kind of like a time capsule fighter. I mean, like, it's very rare that you see somebody like this ever fighting in MMA, let alone the highest promotion available, the UFC nowadays. So it was cool. But also, if I ever do see him again in person, I want to see some takedowns. I want to see some more effective striking.
Yeah, he needs to switch it up. It's just Brazilian jiu-jitsu is just not the answer. And, like, especially in today's day and age, you have these crazy dudes who come out here who can cover any MMA style. It's just, it's not. It's just not going to seal a win. It's not. And I think that's very inevitable. So the fact that we're still working on that, you know, I think let's open our eyes here, people. Brazilian jiu-jitsu is not the answer up against these MMA guys. It's not.
Yeah, I don't want to extend this, but I think we could talk so much more about this.
I'm
whole,
sorry,
like,
all you Brazilian jiu-jitsu people out there, but, like, it's just how I see it. Like, it made me so mad, and I was reading comments, and people just weren't, like, I'm like, how are we not grasping that yet? Like, it wasn't even made as an offensive style. Like, and it, like, you're starting, you, all of it starts on the ground. Like, you're not even practicing like takedowns, and, like, you're gonna get some dude out here like Charles Jourdain and you're just gonna get your ass kicked. Like, try not to say it, but you're going to. It's just, you know, and I like Jourdain. I think he's a really smart guy. I loved watching him in the post fight press conference. He was very well spoken. He was reflective. He was pretty positive. He just seems like a cool dude. I've never really been, like, a fan of his, just no reason. I just haven't hopped on his bandwagon. But after that fight, you know, I think I might be.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's definitely, I mean, he did what he needed to do
exactly
in that fight. And, I mean, he really exposed Crone Gracie's whole style for what it was.
He exposed all of Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, wow. I didn't expect you to go that off about
you
this
didn't expect
whole
me to
topic.
Go
yeah.
So going into this, though, I know you wanted to watch the fight, but who did you think was going to come out on top?
So, if I was a betting man, I probably would have bet on Charles Jourdain. I think that's what my, like, general pick was.
Okay.
But the way I thought this fight would pan out was Crone Gracie either goes out there and in a minute and a half gets him to the ground and chokes him out. Or it happens like we saw it happen.
Yeah.
Where it goes the full, you know, three rounds and Crone Gracie gets shut out.
Yeah.
So
embarrassed.
Yeah. embarrassing performance.
There's a lot of words I could use to describe that, but I'll just keep it. I'll keep it cool. I won't.
Yeah. In the hopes of brevity, I think we'll move on, though, to the next fight in this main card, which was Yan Xiaonan defeating Jessica Andrade via KO, TKO, round one, 2 minutes and 20 seconds into that first round. Mm-hmm. Huge finish for Zhao Nan, and something that I haven't seen out of her in a real long time.
Yeah.
Just having that stopping power, especially against somebody that's as dangerous as Andrade, who is like one of the few female fighters in the UFC, fighting in the UFC that has real knockout power.
Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about, we always harp on like fight picks, like me being right and everyone, you know, making fun of me for being
wrong this time.
No, but I will say that I'm glad we didn't meet last week because I did not see this. I really didn't.
Oh, going into this fight,
I would have got
this thought wrong. That Jessica Andrade 100% had that.
Yeah.
I think that she was more skilled submission wise. I thought she was more skilled
100%.
Striking wise. I felt like that she had more athletic capabilities. But as we saw in the fight, I don't know if Andrade didn't want to be there or if she's like just losing her.
It's like we're watching her downfall.
Exactly.
You know, it's hard.
That's what I'm starting to think. It's just like something's missing from when she fought Nami Yunus the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And when she fought, you know, like Ioana Jacek and like a couple other women to like really get up to that strawweight title shot and become the champion. There's something missing from that whole run to now that like, she's just a different fighter. I don't know. She just seems like a little stale to me.
Yeah, I mean, she literally charged like a blind bull in there and just got KO'd by a taller fighter. It happened way too fast. I mean, Yan winning round one was plus 1,500. I don't think anyone really saw it coming. And it just really shows that this isn't the Jessica we know. And it basically is her downfall. And, you know, I always come in here and, like, joke about how, you know, you never bet against a Russian, blah, blah, blah. But this is now the second time that a Chinese fighter has proven me wrong.
Yeah.
So maybe I got to switch my saying to never bet against the Chinese fighters.
Like, I guess so. And like, it's also funny, too. I guess, like, Andrade's kryptonite is just Chinese fighters because she lost her belt to Weili Zhang.
Which is who I'd love to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Fight next.
That would be amazing. Oh, you saying you want Yan Jianan versus that would be amazing.
I would love that.
That would be huge also.
Especially
because
the two, exactly.
Yeah, that would be, maybe they could do a full pay-per-view card for that.
I think they should.
Maybe in China. That would actually be,
I think there would be a lot of hype around that. I think it's well-deserved on top of it. I mean, I would love to see it. I'm hoping. I think it would be huge. Like, there's no words to describe how big that would be because of the Asian market, as well as they're just the two people that beat Jessica. I mean, I think it's well-deserved.
Yeah. No, I think, actually, I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't go into this whole segment thinking about that, but I love that.
It would be awesome.
That would be great for the promotion, great for the division.
Yeah.
And just great for the Asian market also, I think. Like, I think that would really get a whole lot of fan base there.
1,000%.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have much to say about this topic. I was extremely disappointed. I thought it would at least go the distance. No matter who came out on top, I at least thought it was going the distance. It obviously didn't. And it just kind of made me chuckle because before, Jessica was so confident, and she even said in the press conference, she said, "You're going to see a different Jessica this fight." And we did see a different Jessica, but in the wrong direction. It wasn't the different Jessica we wanted to see, and I think that she wanted us to see. It was hard to watch. It really proved me wrong. I got to start betting on the Chinese. That's what I learned from this. So moving forward, I'm not betting against them.
I guess so. We're going to move on, though. And probably, this fight almost put me to sleep, and I was literally on assignment covering this.
Yeah.
Bilal Muhammad defeating Gilbert Burns via unanimous decision, and probably the most boring fight of the night. I really hate to say it because Bilal Muhammad is a good fighter, mm-hmm. and Gilbert Burns is a good fighter, and it makes you think that 1+1 equals a fantastic fight, but that was not the case here. It was so boring. It was not a good fight.
This is also the second time that I've went against Bilal, and he's proven me wrong. So that was just the icing on the cake of how much I hated this fight. But, you know, it was hard too because of the double injuries. I mean, you had Gilbert Burns' shoulder, and then you had Bilal Muhammad's ankle. So it just, overall, it was just not exciting. And I almost feel bad for Bilal Muhammad because it's like whatever he does, people will always downplay it. And, I mean, understandable, like Gilbert Burns was obviously hurt. But, you know, the dude came in with an injured foot. He was dry fasting, like, all month. I mean, he hasn't had a proper camp since last year, I see here. So I think, you know, I don't think we should downplay the win, but also it wasn't as exciting as we were hoping.
Listen, I like Bilal. I think he has a great personality. His style is something completely different. Like, I really do not enjoy his style.
Really?
And I just don't, and I don't think it's effective, and it somehow just, like, keeps working out for him, and I don't know if it's, like, just because maybe there's something I'm not seeing, and it just, like, yeah, and something I'm not seeing, and it works, or, like, what you just said, luck, because the way that I view this whole win, and, yeah, Bilal's ankle was also compromised, so that definitely needs to be taken into account, but it seems to me like he just kind of beat a not 100% Gilbert Burns. And he kind of just, like, stole his whole momentum off of, you know, his Masvidal win and everything like that. And just kind of, he got that big name without really even passing the test, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, I 100% agree with that still. I do think that we shouldn't downplay the win, but 100%. Gilbert Burns was injured. He wasn't the Gilbert Burns that we normally watch. And it's sad again because he always loses the fights that count the most. I feel like this was a pattern for this card, a lot of these guys. But it's sad. He really needed that one. He didn't win it. People are saying Bilal, you know, should have had a better fight still, but
I mean, I don't want to take away anything from his performance. He did what he needed to do, though. I mean, what he did in the octagon was impressive. I mean, it was north of 130 total strikes landed, 132 significant strikes landed on Gilbert Burns, as opposed to his 81 significant strikes that he landed against Muhammad. And yeah, I mean, it was a good performance. He kept landing that left body kick, which I was really liking. And he was able to take a couple of Burns' big shots and just keep that pressure on walking through, which, you know, Muhammad is so known for. But, I mean, this just doesn't make me too excited for when he possibly fights Leon Edwards or Colby Covington if he wins the belt.
Yeah, I mean, critics were, you know, running their mouth saying that Bilal should have finished him because he was hurt and it almost should have been an easier win for him. But although I do agree with that, I also think Gilbert Burns is a pretty durable guy. He's only had one stoppage loss at 170. So even though he did have the shoulder injury, he's, you know, he's a pretty durable dude. So I was not as happy with Bilal Muhammad as I should be. But then when I took into account, you know, Ramadan and fasting and an ankle injury, you know, I don't want to count him out just yet. It's still a win for him. I'll still give him the win, but I'm just hoping that with either Colby Covington or Edwards, like you said, that we see a better Bilal, because I think if he comes out into either of those possible fights fighting like this, he's not going to win them.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that we need to see a different type of Bilal, and I think that we saw a lot of good things in this fight, a lot of things that he can definitely capitalize on and, like, carry over into a possible next
Shot. Yeah, I mean, he got the distance. He was quick. Burns just tried to counter his shots with a takedown and couldn't. He definitely was quick on his feet, though. I just think he's got a couple things to tweak, but other than that, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And I think, this disappointing result for Burns. We'll see where he bounces back from here.
Who would you rather see fight, Colby Covington or Edwards?
What would I rather see, Bilal fight?
Yeah, who would you rather?
I want to see him fight Edwards first, because they had that no contest eye poke fight during COVID that ended, I believe, in the second round. And that was very, very anticlimactic. And I felt like that fight was actually developing to something that was going to be very interesting in those later rounds. So I want to see that rematch again. I think that'd be very, very fun to check out.
I would like to see that
also,
too.
Also, the storyline for Bilal versus Covington, that would be awesome. Insane. That pre-fight press conference, oof.
Overall, I just think this is a very interesting time in the welterweight division. Yeah. Like, this is fun. Personally, I love the bantamweight division, but watching this lately, all these guys, I'm like, maybe I'm starting to be a welterweight girl. I don't know.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's been getting more
exciting. There's good storylines.
Yeah, I guess Usman losing the belt was good for the division overall.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of action going on. And although this fight in particular wasn't so exciting, I think what's to come from this is exciting. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Moving on to the main event slot for this UFC 288 card. It was something that literally as soon as it got announced, I applied for credentials. I was that excited for it. It's my main man, Aljamain the Funkmaster Sterling, defeating Henry Cejudo via split decision. It was a very, very close fight. Henry Cejudo returning to competition after almost a three-year layoff. He retired during COVID when he was pretty much at the top of the UFC, brass, I guess, if you want to say it. He had a flyweight belt. He had a bantamweight belt. And on top of that, Olympic champion. He was like, I'm all good on the sport. I'm going to retire. 3 years later, this past Saturday, He says, I want to come back and challenge Aljamain Sterling, the current bantamweight title holder, for his belt. And I am happy to say that Sterling succeeded in defending the belt.
I was surprised. I was surprised by how many haters he had in the crowd. I mean, he's a New York guy. He's in Jersey. Like, I was a little shocked. I heard the boos on my TV. I'm sure you heard them in person.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. People hate Aljamain Sterling. And I think
it shocked me a little bit.
It's
like,
weird
it's
for
turf.
The East Coast because, if anything, I was expecting him to get some finally get some love on the Northeast because, I mean, Aljamain Sterling has had a very weird title reign with the whole Petr Yan saga and then taking out, like, a, you know, compromised TJ Dillashaw. And it's kind of added to this whole narrative that he is kind of like a paper champion. He's not really, like, the champion of the bantamweight division. He kind of, he's just not that guy. And,
yeah.
You know, he's just kind of standing in that place until somebody legit comes along. And because of that, a lot of people really, really do not like him. And
I love him.
I know. I love him. I love how he deals with the hate and everything like that. And because of that, every single time he fights, he always gets booed. And when he finally came to the Prudential Center this past Saturday, I was like, it's finally time for him to get some love.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
And then he walks out to unanimous boos. I was like, what is going on here?
You probably were all like scared. Did you want to cheer? I'm sure you secretly did, but you couldn't.
Yeah. Well, I had to maintain.
You had to be professional. Yeah, but yeah,
journalistic
neutrality.
I know
it hurt you. You probably wanted to stand up for your boy.
Yeah.
Give him a little soft clap.
Yeah, when that split decision came out, I definitely gave him a bit of a clap. I was like,
let's go. Smile. Yeah. Good to hide the smile. I was honestly surprised a little bit that one of the judges gave it to Henry. I really was like,
Yeah, oh my God, the scorecards coming out of this fight, people were
not happy.
Not happy.
Well, a lot of people weren't happy with the win. A lot of people weren't happy with Sterling winning it, and that shocked me too. I'm like, are we blind? Like,
no,
open our eyes here, people.
I think people are a little bit blind with that. I think 100% Aljamain Sterling won that fight.
I think they're blinded by their own bias. That's what it is.
Yeah. No, I think 100%. It's something that Aljamain Sterling has dealt with his entire championship run because of all those kind of past factors that I was talking about. People said that he didn't win against Petr Yan, obviously, the first fight because of disqualification. They said he didn't win the second fight against Yan because of the whole, you know, grappling versus damage thing. And then with TJ Dillashaw, people said that win wasn't legit. So it's just it's another obstacle for Aljamain Sterling, and I feel like people are very quick to say, oh, that's not a legitimate win. Mm-hmm. I think that went the other way. But, like, if you really look at this fight, I mean, I don't think there was really an area where he really got outclassed in.
No, I mean, I think 1,000% rounds 1, 3, and 4 went to him. I think 2 and 5 were a little iffy. I think maybe 5 went to Cejudo, but 2, to me, was very close. I still think that could have went to Sterling. So I just don't know how anyone would not think that he won this.
Yeah, no, I don't know how anyone could think that they, that Henry Cejudo walked away the winner here. I mean, in terms of damage, in terms of control time, in terms of total strikes, I just think that Henry Cejudo just kind of got outclassed here, but not to an extreme extent. I think that's what kind of is allowing for people to say that maybe Cejudo did win and it was a little bit closer. But I do want to point out, though, that one of the judges scoring this fight, Derek Clearly, actually scored round 5 for Sterling, which is absolutely absurd. Out of any of the rounds in this fight,
that's the one that should have went to Cejudo.
Exactly.
Just crazy. That's what I mean. Get some new judges. Come on, Dana. Yeah. Let's reevaluate who we're picking here.
Yeah, they got to figure this out. And especially just like when you always hear the split decision with Bruce Buffer, you know, coming on the mic and being like, judge one scores up, blah, 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 blah. Your heart always sinks, and you're I can only imagine what the fighters are thinking also, just being like, oh, okay, I'm pretty sure that I won this fight,
and then you hear
judge
jerk
one, and you're like, oh no, am I about to get missing like half of my pay here?
But I think
Aljamain Sterling, I mean, I think it was a good performance for him. I think it was definitely a close fight, but we expected it to be a close fight against a person that is a Olympic champion, a double champ in the UFC. Henry Cejudo is extremely respected in not only the UFC, but just MMA overall. I mean, he's a guy that people come to for training, like a Demetrius Johnson or a John Jones. They go to Henry Cejudo's camp to prepare for their title fights. So I think that we expected it to be a close fight, but I think that Aljamain really kind of, silence the naysayers a little bit with this performance.
I mean, I completely agree. I think Cejudo, like, for a guy that's been out this long, you know, kudos to him. I think he held his own at 36. He still gave a good fight. I think wrestling looked really good on both ends. I think that you know, for Sterling, though, to go out there and take Cejudo's wrestling, which is kind of what he's known for, and his shots, that was pretty impressive. I just think that, you know, for me, that all of Cejudo's finishes he has had were against people with pretty, like, sus chin. Sorry, I know that's a weird way to say that. But I don't know why anyone would think that Cejudo was going to, like, flatline Sterling. I saw a lot of people predicting that, and I was like, that's never going to happen. At least that's what I thought. You know, I enjoyed the fight. I just think that, to me, it was inevitable that was going to happen. I think anyone who thought Cejudo was just going to, like, knock him out is just a moron.
Yeah, with, like, no, I think that those people, yeah, have rocks for brains, to be quite honest with you. Because, I mean, if you really look at Cejudo's, you know, past couple fights, he beats Marais via, like, round 4 KO TKO. But Marais is, like, known to have a paper chin after that fight.
Yeah, so and that was, like, that's kind my of the point, start of his, you know,
downfall. And then he finishes.
Sus chins. That's, like, my new thing, I guess. I don't know. It's a weird way of saying it.
No, I mean, it's true, though. And then he defeats Dominic Cruz with a knee after Dominic Cruz has been out of the, you know, out of training MMA for, like, over 4 years, only comes back because of COVID, and he feels like that he might be able to win.
Yeah.
And those were, like, his two big finishes, and people were saying, like, off of those two finishes, oh, Sterling better watch out and everything like that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Makes no sense. But I do want to talk about this post fight that happened, because it was very,
awesome,
very interesting.
And I'm sure you were, I'm so jealous. Like,
I know, it was so cool.
How close were you?
So I was up on the press ledge, so it was pretty cool. I was able to actually get a...
You were next to Sean O'Malley at one point, weren't you?
Yeah, so when I walked down to start to head out of the van, you know, watch a bit of the post fight press conference, I literally, like, walk right by Sean O'Malley and Tim Welch, like, their coach, you know, Sean O'Malley's coach, sit down for the press conference. He gets up there, says his whole spiel about how he wants to be Aljamain Sterling and everything like that.
And you got to be right
while
there.
At the same time, Aljamain Sterling and Henry Cejudo are walking back, you know, for their post-fight medicals and everything like that, which I was also right next to. Oh, my God. I was a little bit starstruck, but I do want to talk a little bit about what O'Malley actually said, though, in this post-fight, which was very, very interesting. And I think that this could make the bantamweight division even more exciting.
Agreed. I loved watching that exchange.
It was so interesting.
That was the best part of the night. Aside from the one fight I loved, that was the best part of the night.
Yeah, so Sean O'Malley enters the octagon during the post-fight interviews while Sterling is literally doing his interview. He calls out Sterling as the next title challenger. And off the back of that, they start just jawing at each other. And the funniest thing ever is O'Malley has this Michael Jackson jacket on.
The Thriller.
And the Thriller jacket. And when he starts doing, like, this face-off with Aljamain Sterling, he hands his jacket off to like, somebody just, you know, who he
thought it was one of his boys.
Maybe his coach, something. He just literally hands it off and starts doing his face-off. Little does he know, the person that he handed it to was Mrav Dvalishvili, part of Aljamain's corner and also active UFC bantamweight. He puts on the jacket, jumps up onto the cage. It was so funny. And I literally saw this all in live time up on the ledge. I literally see him hop on there with the jacket going, yeah.
That's so funny. I love how Sean O'Malley didn't even realize for the longest time. Like, he had no idea. So this was all going on. And, like, you hear the people, like, cheering for him in this goofy little Thriller jacket on the cage. And Sean O'Malley, it's almost like he thought everyone was, like, cheering for him or hyped. Like, he just tuned it out. And then he goes looking for his jacket.
And then he starts looking beyond, and he was like, oh, my God, he has my jacket.
And then he, like, tried to fight him after. It was hysterical. Yeah. I loved it. And, you know, I don't take this the wrong way, but it gave me sort of, like, a little bit of a WWE flair in a way. Like, it just felt, fun. And remember when we talked about, you know, Endeavor Bine? I was like, are we going to start getting a little more, like, comical value to this? Are we going to get, like, some more characterization? And it felt a little, like,
It definitely theatrical. Had a little bit of that to it, but I think it, like, that's why I love these Long Island guys so much. Like, I mean, Rob, again, also part of that whole Aljamain Sterling, Matt Frivola, Jim Allen, Long Island. Those love guys just have that personality. Like, they're not afraid
it's
to
fun.
Just
they
be, like, themselves. It's so funny.
And that was a really good note to end the night off with. Mm-hmm. It was. Everyone was laughing. Everyone was smiling. Everyone was having fun. Mm-hmm. Everyone was literally just booing Sterling all pissed off. I mean, like, 5 minutes prior, and then, like, that happened. Everyone was like, happy again. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it was fun.
Yeah, and I think it kind of just... I don't know. I don't want to make it too big of a moment, but I think it just kind of showed, like, the value of, like, a Mrav and, like, an Aljamain Sterling in the UFC, and I'm just, like, I'm glad they kind of got their moment.
And I think it's set up perfectly a future Sean O'Malley fight, hoping for September. I don't know. Has that been confirmed yet? No?
It hasn't been confirmed, but in actually the post-fight interview, I heard that he said that he was open to fighting in Madison Square Garden, which could
I'm taking the credentials.
We could definitely all sign up, do a little bit of a pound-for-pound collective going to that UFC event, but if that happens, that would be awesome.
I would love that. I don't know if this is controversial.
Off the back of that, Cejudo in his post-fight interview, he actually doesn't want to retire, kind of puts all of those rumors to bed, and actually calls out Merab Dvalishvili in his post-fight press conference to fight on that undercard of the Sean O'Malley Aljamain Sterling fight, which actually sounds amazing. I would love to see that. That'd be so cool.
See, I would love that. I would, you know, I'd love to see Sterling Sean O'Malley as well. But I'm not. I don't know if this is controversial. I can't stand Sean O'Malley. I know a lot of people love him. I think he's predominantly a fan favorite. He gives off like that Conor McGregor energy. He just has that personality, and I can't stand him. I know all of my friends are obsessed with him. They think he's like heaven sent, and I just cannot stand him. So I would love to watch Sterling, you know, reign supreme on him too. We'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it. We got a lot of good stuff coming up. I feel like we always do. That's the joy of UFC. Mm-hmm. There's always something going on every weekend. It's a great weekend.
Yeah, no,
Saturdays
definitely.
Are the best day of the week.
Oh, it is. It is. And going off the back of that, we do have a quick bit of other news that I just want to mention on our episode for next week. We have Devin Haney taken on the big, the bad, the ugly.
I want to jump up and down right now.
Yeah, that's going to be a crazy fight. I cannot wait to break that one down. And we're also going to have Mahdi back in the studio, so that'll be great.
That'll be exciting as well. He's a boxing guy. He's going to love talking about that.
Yeah.
I almost wore my Devin Haney shirt today, but I was like, you know what? I'm saving it for next week. Like, next week is the week.
Next week is the week. We're going to have a full episode, probably an hour and 10, just talking all about that fight. And we also do have a bit of UFC fights going on. I believe it is Roshan Strike versus Jalton Almeida, which definitely is a bit of a downturn from UFC 288. But
I'm focusing in on boxing that weekend for
100%.
Sure.
100%. I think they're doing the same thing that was with Ryan Garcia versus Tank.
They know what everyone's going to be watching. They're like, eh.
Exactly.
Everyone wants to see Tank Davis this Saturday. Everyone wants to see Devin Haney win, which he will. Oh, God.
Ooh,
I hope I don't.
Yeah, you better not.
I'll save it for next week. I don't want to. Now, apparently, I just started a losing streak somewhat. So.
Exactly. Yeah. So
and I was on top. Ugh. I'm so happy Mahdi's not here. He would rub it in my face, and I just can't handle that right now.
We'll get into it next week. We'll see. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it for this week's episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to check out the fights this weekend and our episode next week, breaking down all of that stuff. Before I go, I want to give a big thanks to my great co-host, Riley, and our producer, Ralph Barbieri.
And we miss you, Mahdi.
We do miss you, Mahdi. Hopefully, we will see you next week. I am Andrew Canary. Have an amazing weekend, and we'll see you back here for more Pound for Pound.